Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle. Hey everyone, this is Judy with Wellness Renaissance. I had the great pleasure of having a conversation with Sarah Banford Seidelman, and if you are not familiar with Sarah, she shares a pretty awesome journey going from physician to shaman and life coach in her book, Swimming with Elephants. In our conversation that you will hear shortly, she shares some about her big life shift and how it all came about. And then she talks about what we can do to be more in touch with ourselves as we go forward, and especially if we don't feel like we're living our personal fullest. First of all, I have a couple events that I want to remind you of. The first one, actually two of them, on the same day in pretty much the same location. The first one is the Northland Community Wellness Day, and that is happening Saturday, April 14th, 2018, 10 to 2 p.m. And that's happening at the Essentia Health Heritage Sports Center. And as that is happening, also at Clyde Ironworks, right there in, I believe it's the attached building. I guess I haven't been from one to the other, but I believe it's all attached there, is the Birth and Baby Fair. And that is also happening Saturday, April 14th, 2018, from 10 to 2. They are both free events, so go check them out as they call to you. On Saturday, May 19th, from 10 to 5 at the Radisson in downtown Duluth, Minnesota, there is an event called the Spirit Wellness Connection. And a little blurb about it, the Spirit and Wellness Connection is a one-day event for like-minded and open-minded people to come together to learn, network, and share, experience speakers, workshops, and a marketplace of mind, body, and spirit. And tickets are going to be going on sale soon. They're $7. You can check out a ton of information on the website, spiritwellnessconnection.com. And next week, our podcast is actually going to be an interview or a conversation with the Infinite Three, the three ladies that are putting this event together and highlighting it just so they can talk about what their intent is with the whole event. And since it is something new in our area, great opportunity to do that. And we'll talk about this next week too, but we're going to be doing a live podcast from the event. So come find out what that's about too. Lots of cool stuff going on. The other thing I just want to mention, I've had some really nice comments and compliments about the work that I'm doing on the podcast. And I just want to say to people, first of all, thank you very much for the kind words and the compliments and the encouragement, for sure. And if this is something you enjoy, whether it's this episode or you like the content in general, please share it with anybody who might find interest in what we're listening to and the idea behind it. So definitely pass it along to your friends. That would be really great. Very much appreciate it. The information I'm putting out here so people can get it and have access to it and find it. So please do share. And thank you, thank you, thank you in advance. All right, let's head right into our conversation with Sarah. Sarah.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for being here and chatting with me today. This is awesome.
It's awesome to be here. Thanks for having me.
So you had a very big life career change shift. You figured out the world you were in, which was a very cool, interesting world, was not working for you. So talk about that and how you went through that process, or had maybe ultimately the peace and the understanding that you had to do something different.
Yeah. Well, for me, it was, I think these things, you know, discomfort at work or feeling like you're not in the right job anymore. You know, for some people, it's like one big thing happens and like suddenly you're thrown into chaos. Like the boss you love leaves and you get some new boss and life is suddenly hell for you. In my case, it was more of a slow, gradual process over time where I just felt I was working in a hospital as a pathologist or a physician. Over time, I just felt that less and less engaged with the actual work I was getting paid to do, which was to stare into a microscope all day and diagnose disease, which is something I loved and was passionate about and was so fascinated with for years. But slowly over a short period of time or a few years, I started feeling like, this isn't thrilling me as much. And I noticed, like, we would have this breast cancer conference every week, and I would notice that in that conference, when the nurses and social workers would talk about, I was in charge, of course, talking about the tumor, this person's breast cancer, and what exactly the genetic makeup was, and what, you know, was it aggressive? Was it looking more of like a low grade process? That kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I started being kind of not so interested in that, and I was really interested in what the nurses were talking about. Like, they would bring up the fact that this person, for example, had no social support, husband was abusive, nobody to take them to chemo. And I started thinking to myself, okay, picturing this woman and thinking, what would have happened if, like, 10 years ago we had somehow circled the wagons around her? And what if she did have, somehow we had gotten, found her a loving partner and she had a wonderful community of people? Like, I started to wonder, like, would she still be sick? And I thought that was kind of a weird thought to have as a doctor, because, I mean, it was just a little. And then I thought, A, I'm either crazy or this is a bad thought, and I really shouldn't be thinking this because I'm supposed to be the doctor. I'm supposed to be, you know, worried about the science and all this. But it started getting more and more and more uncomfortable. It was like, wow. Meanwhile, at night, I started reading a lot of books, sort of self-helpy books like Deepak Chopra, Louise Hay, Martha Beck, all these marvelous luminaries. And a lot of the stuff they were saying, like, made absolutely no sense to me. I was like, what? It was like, you know, like, you know, your destiny is also hunting you while you're hunting your destiny. Or, like, you know, think positive thoughts. And I was like, does that really work? I mean, it all kind of sounded pretty pie in the sky. And I also had 4 kids and my husband was a doctor too. So his life was pretty chaotic. So what I did was I thought, I don't think I'm depressed, because I knew what depression was. In my family, there was a lot of depression. So I was like, I'm going to hire a life coach. And even that, I was like, don't tell anybody about that, because people would think you're crazy. Like, who needs a life coach? I mean, we're here to be alive. We should by default know what we're doing. So it kind of made me feel like I was maybe a bit of a failure, but I was like, I really need to talk to somebody. So I hired this life coach. And through working with her, which was such a relief, I think it was just a relief to pour out my soul and just tell her, wow, I'm really uncomfortable here. And one of the things I gained from that coaching was I learned how to really do a lot better in the place where I was. So I learned to have a little bit easier of a time in my job. So that's the first thing that I always tell people. Like, if you hate your job right now, I mean, of course, you can always walk out tomorrow and quit and, you know, start looking for something else. And maybe that is something that feels really good to you. But for a lot of us, doing something that abrupt might really trigger us into fear, because, like, oh my gosh, where's our next paycheck? And when you're really afraid, that's a tough place to be. So I always encourage people to see if you can find a way to feel better at work where you are right now. And one of the things I learned from my coach back then was I was doing a lot of things, people-pleasing behaviors. I was looking to, like, be like, I think I had learned in medical school and I'd learned in my family and through school in general, like, be good, you know, like, please other people. Mm-hmm. And I learned, oh, that person wants this, so I'm going to deliver that to them. You know, whatever they want me to be, I'll be that. And then and it worked, because in medical school, oh yeah, you figure out how to get a good grade. You know how to, I'm going to do this and this and talk to that person this way and this person that, you know. And so I had been doing a lot of people-pleasing stuff at work, which I eventually stopped doing. And that helped a lot. So I started enjoying work more, and especially enjoying the people more at work, because I had been stuck for a while. But then I still was like, wow, even though I really am enjoying the people more and I'm taking more time for myself to just rest because I was overworking a little bit. After that, I was like, I still don't, this maybe isn't what I want to be doing. So with the support of a coach and my spouse, I eventually took a sabbatical from work. So that's one of the second things I will tell people. Like, if you hate your job right now, one of the things I invite you to do is to make a little space. You don't necessarily have to go off and take a sabbatical like I did. But if that idea really thrills you, start to plan it. Like, put it on the calendar for 2020 or whenever you think it might be possible. You know, hey, I'm going to try to take a sabbatical. Or just take a weekend or an afternoon.
Intentional time.
Yeah, intentional time for you to explore, okay, if it's not this that feels good to me in my work anymore, what would feel good? Or what do I think would feel good? Because you don't really know until you try. And so during this sabbatical, my goal was kind of to explore actually coaching and, like, learning what is it like to be a coach, because it had helped me so tremendously to be coached by this other person. I was like, well, maybe I could. I wasn't really sure, but I was like, well, maybe I could help somebody else like that. It was such a fun process. So I ended up doing Martha Beck's coach training. And on that sabbatical, I explored this concept and I loved coach training. And I loved helping people in that way and really just listening to people, which is a lot of what coaching is. And then helping them to discover their own inner guidance to find their way. Mm-hmm. And then some weird things started to happen. Like, I stumbled into this old ancient idea that the wild animals that cross your path have messages for you that will be helpful. So if you're feeling lost, you should, you know, notice what animals are crossing your path and see what the messages are. And I was like, wow, that is the craziest thing I've ever heard of. Like, that sounds so illogical and makes no sense. Like, in my science-based reality, animals were sort of below humans. I mean, you know, I had that classical thinking that humans are king of the world and we're the smartest and the wisest. But I bought this book because I was like, I could not buy the book. So, like, if you, again, if you're one of those people that hates your work now and you're looking for more meaningful work, more work that you love again, whatever weird books are jumping off the shelf at you, or funny classified ads for weird classes, or trips or adventures, or weird things are showing up, and you're like, I don't know why, but I have a strange feeling I have to go to Buffalo, New York to take a yoga class. You know, just really, if you can, find a way to honor those strange urgings and yearnings, because I think that's really our soul, how it communicates. It just puts weird things in our way, and we're like, wow, I am drawn to this thing that makes no sense. The animal spirit thing. So I started kind of playing with this idea and being curious, well, what animals, you know, what messages might they have for me? And as I played with it, I started noticing, wow, there are some messages here. So, like, one of the most simple, profound one was for me was I wanted to write when I was on my sabbatical from work and home that summer. I was like, I got this real strong urge to write like a book. But even though I had no idea how to write a book, and I wasn't a writer and I wasn't an English major or any of those things, I had no clue. I was a reader, so I've read a lot of books, but so that one day when I was feeling really frustrated, like, I really want to write a book, but how do you do that? It just, I would look at books, I'd go to Barnes & Noble and I'd get overwhelmed, like, oh my God, like, all these smart people have written books and somehow they figured it out, but I don't know. So that day I went out on a walk in the neighborhood and I was just like, okay, I'm asking for an animal, a creature, a beastie, somebody to show up and give me a clue of what I need to do here. And that's something you can do. I'll invite just listeners to just ask, you know, before you go out in the woods, before you hit the trail, ask, please, universe, send me a beastie to show me how I can proceed here. I'm really stuck. How do I do this? And that day I was so bummed out because it was like there was nothing interesting. I mean, like, I didn't see a bear. I didn't see a mountain lion. I'd heard about mountain lions recently being in the neighborhood. Not that I wanted to see a mountain lion, but, you know, there's a lot of exciting things that could be out there. But there was just nothing. I mean, I didn't even really hear any interesting birds. But the one thing I did notice was this ant going across the sidewalk. And I was just like, so mundane and so boring. Like, how could that have a message for me? Something so small as an ant. But I wrote it in my little journal, you know, like, I saw this ant going across the thing. And then I asked myself, okay, if this, you know, the question that I learned to ask was, like, if this is a kind universe, what might the ant trying to be telling me, trying to help me to write this book that I seemingly and absurdly want to write? And the ant, I was like, oh, this ant was just carrying this tiny grain of sand over to this big pile, you know, where the other ants were. And I realized, oh, you know, like, ants build these massive sand castles over time, like, one grain at a time with the help of many other ants. I was like, okay, that makes sense. So, like, what would it look like for me today to pick up a tiny grain of sand in my book project and move it across the sidewalk? And I decided for me that day was, like, open a file on my computer and call it my book I'm writing, and then, like, write a few, you know, random ideas that I had. And so that's what I did. And it was weird because that felt good, you know? Mm-hmm. It got me into some sort of action. So, I would invite people just be curious about that. And eventually I started a podcast with another coach who was in training with me with animal spirits. We started to interact. We had a call-in show and people would call in, and sometimes we got people that would, like, totally disrupt the call and we'd have to delete them. But a lot of times we get amazing people who would tell us these incredible stories about how wild animals had shared messages with them or inspired them or made them feel stronger and how it just changed their life. And after, like, I don't know how many calls, like 80 of these calls, I was like, whoa. I mean, I was just bowled over by how animals really, we have this relationship if we're open to it and how they can really guide us. Anyway, that's really what sort of, by following that strange yearning, that led to more things. And eventually I dove deeper into that world of these ancient practices, which all really come from shamanism, which is an ancient method of healing where a person, we would call them the shaman, would alter their consciousness and receive helpful information from the spirits, you know, some of which might be in animal form, you know, and then come back and bring that information to help or heal either the person or the community. And that's what I do now, along with life coaching and writing books. And now I've written 4 books. So a lot has happened in the last 8 years. And I feel like now I've really landed in a place where I'm doing really meaningful work that feels really good to me. But for those who are out there seeking their most meaningful work or something that feels really good to them again, because it's not feeling good, the one thing I would invite you to do is just really try to make a little space for yourself in your life to explore what it is you do love or what does sound juicy to you right now. And especially if it makes no sense, is not logical whatsoever. Like if you're right now, a chef and you suddenly, you know, feel drawn to setting like bow and arrow, like there's like some ancient martial arts or something like that. Do that. I mean, and just see, because these funny, strange yearnings, I think our soul knows exactly, or I believe now, like our soul knows exactly what it is we want to do and where we want to go and how we're going to do it. But we have to kind of sort of be willing to listen to that and follow it a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's cool. I think of my own life with the podcast piece. So that's been something that's kind of niggling at me all the time, all the time, all the time. And of course, there's a billion reasons. Oh, I can't do that. Why I can't do that. Why I won't work. And, you know, and it's in the process of working, but it feels good. You know, it's nice to be in a place where you're doing something that feels good. And that's what you're describing, is that following that thing, even though you don't understand it, you don't know where it's going. And we don't get a lot of that in our culture. Like, we kind of follow your bliss, follow your passion. It still has to make sense sort of and fit in a box.
Yeah. And we like things that are like, what are you going to be? Oh, you're going to be a dental technician and Right. You're going to go to 2 years of school. And then, you know, like we like to know what's the outcome. And I think in our culture, that's a big thing, especially for parents who are like, oh no, my kid's going to be a social studies, whatever. And they're never going to have a job. But I'm always like, let's stay curious. Let's stay open, because you never know where that's going to lead. And when you were saying, you know, like you had the podcast in your mind for a long time, like it's there kind of like niggling or whispering mm-hmm. to you. And I think that many of us have those things, but then fear will stop us. So like fear, one of the most common fears I get from people is that somehow if I follow this dream, it will be a bad thing. Like it's either a selfish thing and it could somehow harm my family or people I love. It could be like a bad thing, like financially, or it's not responsible, maybe, like especially when people think, I really want to go to grad school. Like maybe they're in their 50s and they've got kids in college, and suddenly they're like, I've got a hankering to go back for my PhD in zoology, which there are no jobs and it makes no sense, but I can't stop buying like these books on animals and I should be spending that money on something else or putting it in retirement. And I always just say, that's kind of the most common thing. So you're not alone if you're feeling that way. And I always like to remind people that when we follow our dreams and when we pursue the things that like light us up, that starts to cause a ripple effect. And it really, when other people see us doing that or watch us doing that, they're getting permission because through our behavior to do whatever it is they're longing to do. And trust me, everybody out there has got things they're longing to do and they're scared to do. And it takes a lot of courage and compassion to do these things, right? To hop on a thing and dare to record a podcast right. And then dare to put it out to people. Like, would anybody want to listen? You know,
exactly.
It's like, and
exactly.
Yeah, it's scary.
Yeah. Well, and you always have those little noises from, again, our culture that are kind of like, how big for your britches are you? Kind of thing.
Right. And who are you to think you could write a book? You're
right.
Not even an English major. You don't even know grammar. Like grammar, that was one of my big hangups. I'm like, my grammar's terrible. My mom was always correcting me on my grammar. And I'm like, how could I, you know? But it turns out you really don't need to be that great at grammar. I mean, that's other people can help you with
There's,
that.
There are other people who do that. Yeah.
Another thing I have always done or I found kind of exhilarating is to maybe there's something like for me, I wanted to write a book, right? And then I was afraid, especially as I started to share more personal things in books about my own self and my own foibles and failures. I started thinking, is that going to be like, are people going to really be like not like me because I'm doing that or whatever? And will I be criticized? You know, will people be angry? And so one thing I did is I went and started looking on Amazon at all the reviews of some of the writers that I admire a lot. And I noticed, like, Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote Eat, Pray, Love, one of the most beloved, like, memoirs, on Amazon, you will go there and you guys can go read these if you like. She's got, like, the most horrifying, like, 0 and 1% star readings. Like, the most awful critiques you can imagine. And I would read those because it just reminded me, like, even if you do a really great job and you resonate with, like, in her case, you know, 99% of the planet, which I think is quite unusual, there will still be people who do not like what you do, who think you are, you know, a waste of space and that your writing is vacuous and navel-gazing and whatever. And that just always gave me courage. Like, despite the fact that she got all those horrible reviews, she kept continuing on, you know, and that's another thing.
I actually, I thought you were very courageous in your book to share some and some of your foibles and family situations, things that happen. And I think it's also really encouraging as a reader because you feel like you're not so alone. You know, like, okay, this person's human and they're brave to put this out into the world. And it is. It's kind of like you're sitting there going, oh my goodness, but yay!
You know,
at the same time. And I think it's helpful for us to be, in general, to be more open to being imperfect. And we, again, we get that message a lot of being perfect.
And a lot of times when we look at other people, especially when you're, like, if you're unhappy at work or you're unhappy with your health or your well-being, whatever it is, or your marriage, it's the tendency is, the human tendency is to look at others and go, oh my gosh, that person's got it made. She's already written the book or she's already got the podcast going or their marriage is amazing. Like, you know, whatever it is. And what we don't see from that perfect marriage, that wonderful book, that fantastic podcast, and that those people associate with those things, you see, like, the success on top. That's what you're looking at. But what you don't see is, like, the struggle that that took to get them there and all the work and all the failure and all the continuing to rededicate themselves and continuing to talk themselves into it. Like, okay, I'm scared to do this podcast, but by gall, I'm doing it. Or I'm just not in a good mood. I don't feel like doing anything. But I told that person I would interview them. And now I've got to, like, put my hairspray on and get out, or pull up my big girl pants and do it. We don't see that. And I think that's what I love. I love books that really show, or stories where people really show you how vulnerable they are and how, where it has gone all sideways and how they got through that. Because ultimately, anybody who's done anything amazing, they have failed and failed and fallen apart and melted down and been down and been high, been low, and everything in between.
Yeah. And hearing that is so important.
I think so.
Yeah. You mentioned two things. You mentioned Louise Hay, and I was thinking about, I don't remember how old, but she started to write. Like, wasn't she, like, in her 60s when she started to write?
Crazy. And she self-published her first book, You Can Heal Your Life. It was, like, nobody would accept it, I believe, was the story. And so she just printed it out, like, on a Xerox machine and started distributing it. And eventually it's become one of, like, the most highly sold and translated into a billion languages, amazing book that so many people love.
And not to mention a publishing house and all of the other things she's done. I mean, what a cool thing to think you're never too old to do what you are called to do.
Right.
Yeah.
I saw this amazing film last year. It was these women and they were interviewing this woman who was a New Yorker who was, she was being interviewed because she had fantastic style. She was in her 80s and she wore, like, false eyelashes that were, like, purple, this amazing, crazy, beautiful, eccentric style. And they were interviewing and they're like, well, when did you really come into your own? And when did, you know, kind of, and she goes, oh, honey, she's like, just last year, I realized I am just getting started. Like, I realized my true power. And this is, like, age 82. So it's like, yeah, the journey just, you're never, maybe you got trained as something or you think you were something when you were 20 and now you're feeling stuck. It's like you get to reinvent yourself as many times as you want and that it's never too late to start. Yeah.
Right. The other thing you said early on, which I think some we might hear and think, huh, how does that work? You had talked about not being as much of a people pleaser and that you then were more happy at work and you then were happier with your relationships with people.
Yes.
Like, that's a really interesting statement that one might think, well, how does that work? Because if you were not, how did you go from not being people pleasing to being authentic and real and having that be okay, your shift being okay with everybody?
Yeah. Well, I still work on that. So it's not a passive process, people. And I think girls and women struggle with this, but I think men do too. But mm-hmm. I find it's something, especially high-achieving women. I mean, I've noticed it's a real pattern, like, of that we've learned, you know, certain things to people please. So, for example, one of the things I used to do at work was when it would get really slamming busy, I mean, we would get overloaded with cases and everybody would be stressed. I would notice a couple people were really stressed. So I'd go in their office and be like, oh my gosh, you know, like, I've got extra time. Do you want me to take, you know, like 10 extra cases? Or what can I take from you? Can I take some cases? Which is a fine thing to do, right? It started out innocently enough. Like, how can I relieve the stress of other people because they seem really stressed? But over time, that became like, I was running around doing that for everybody. I mean, I was just in my own way, you know, just like, hey, can I take some cases? I guess that's how I began to see myself as valuable in a way. Mm-hmm. This is how I have value in the world. But after I started doing that a lot, there would be days that I was really, really busy already myself. And then there would be a boatload of cases would come in, or it would get crazy and their people would be crabby. And I would notice, oh, they're upset. And then I'd be like, my gosh, I should help them because I usually do help them, even though I'm crazy busy. So I'd be like, oh, I'll take some cases. But then it was like I was overloading myself. Mm-hmm. So I really had a hard time. And so what I did was I kind of immediately decided to take, once I noticed that that was the behavior, I stopped taking cases. I didn't really explain myself. I never set anybody down to know, you know, to say, hey, by the way, I'm not going to be taking. I just stopped doing it.
Right.
And it was incredible. Like, nobody freaked out. Maybe there was a little, like, surprise or, like, confusion on with other people. I don't know. But then suddenly I had a little time, you know, to, like, write in my journal or go walk outside. Mm-hmm. Or, like, everybody in our office, when there was some downtime, sometimes we would go to the workout at the workout center across the street. And it was like, finally, I had a little time for myself, you know? And it wasn't that I didn't ever reach out to people again. Then I did start to notice. I would check in with myself first, though. Like, do I have the energy today to help somebody else out? How am I doing? Am I okay? Mm-hmm. Can I get through my work and get home and all that? So that was, like, one of the things that I was doing. And it was such a relief, because what happens when you're doing that work, then you start to resent the other person, mm-hmm. even though it's you, right. Who's, it's ironic, right? And that, you know, that can go into home, too. Like, because out of love for our spouse, we start to, like, try to please them, like, maybe cook the right food for them, or I don't know, anything, drive the car the right way because you're noticing that they don't like the way you're doing it or whatever. I mean, I still have to keep a close eye on myself. In fact, the other day I just said to my husband, because I don't know, I was trying to figure out what he wanted to eat, and then I was just like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to try to figure out what you want to eat. I'm going to trust that I'm cooking something and you're either going to like it or you're not, but, you know, it's not my responsibility to try to figure that out. And so it's not something that I think you're one, or for myself anyway, not one and done, like, now I'm totally free and I never people please anymore, you know. I just got onto myself and started noticing that's a behavior that doesn't serve me. Yeah.
When are you people pleasing to sort of gain status, and when are you helping?
Right, right. When do you genuinely want to offer help? And I think it's a slippery, yeah, you just have to stay always noticing yourself, observing what's going on here. Yeah, manipulation. I see that with my kids all the time. Hey, mom, you know, come up and give me a hug. And then, like, can we go to Starbucks? Or whatever it is, you know. But I think we all know that stuff as adults, and we may use this unconsciously.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And like you say, it's so in our culture.
Yeah.
You know.
And, yeah.
As women, and then kids and parents and all those trying to figure things out.
Right. It's like that. You're always walking on that razor's edge, like attending to yourself and also extending yourself to care for others and knowing when you have the energy to do that or you don't. And are you doing it from a clean place? Or are you doing it because without doing it, you don't have any value, which isn't true. I mean, we all have inherent value. You just, whoever's listening to this, if you're just sitting there, you have value. You don't need to do anything, you know? You're fantastic just as you are.
You've definitely kind of touched on this and talked about how to kind of make that shift, because I think you're right. If you're not happy in your space, listen to what's coming at you. And I'm thinking for the people who maybe are not in the place to move, big move, don't even maybe know what that is, but their response is, I'm really stuck here.
Yeah.
Because maybe it's a really good paycheck and they know that that job, they just don't think another job like that is available to make that kind of money to keep them in stasis.
Right.
And so there is a lot of fear when it comes to economic stability.
Money's one of the number one, yeah.
Right, exactly. So, and you kind of touched on this already, but thinking about those people who might in their mind be wanting to do this, wanting to pay more attention, wanting to listen to what you're saying, because they in a sense know you're right, but also the resistance, the sort of, no, I can't do this.
Yeah.
What other, or even reiterating a little bit what you said, but what small steps can they take to try to help find that peace where they're at?
Yeah. Well, first of all, is to be really loving and gentle and kind to yourself, because what you're contemplating or what that thing is that's calling you is really scary. And so, and that thought, oh my God, if I say yes to that, then, you know, I'll be in financial ruin or my partner will leave me or, you know, something terrible might happen is really scary. So how we deal with that is we just do something really, 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 really tiny. And by that, I mean you just do something tiny that in a way feels like stepping towards, like that ant, like picking up a grain of sand. It might be you just casually, you know, go check out some books from the library to do a little more research on whatever it is, scuba diving in the Virgin Islands and owning a scuba shop or whatever. Or you buy, you know, you go to Barnes & Noble or your local bookstore and you buy a copy of Personal Finance for Dummies because you're thinking you'd like to get in to become a personal financial advisor because you've gone through some kind of money hell and gotten to the other side and you want to maybe share some of that wisdom with others. Whatever it is, doing something really tiny that feels safe. Maybe it's making a phone call to somebody you know who does the job that you love. Like when we're really jealous of somebody, if we feel really like envious of their position, that can be a clue to that's something we think we want to do. And so to interview them or take them to lunch. So do something so tiny. And then once you've done that one little thing, you reward yourself by like, you know, it could be something little. You take a tiny 15-minute nap or you, I don't know, get the organic raspberries and put them on your salad tonight, you know, and spend the extra $2 on that or whatever it is. But to do some little reward that feels sweet towards yourself for taking that risk, because even though it's a tiny, tiny step, it can feel scary to pick up the phone or even to check those books out. Like maybe your roommate or your spouse might judge you like, my God, what are you doing reading about scuba diving? You have no, you know, no business reading about that. You're a farmer or whatever. You know, we don't live anywhere near an ocean. What is this about? So, yeah. And then just continue to take the next tiny step. And maybe you just like brainstorm, what are all the tiny things I could do without ever leaving my job, without ever like getting an airplane ticket or doing anything crazy or selling the farm?
Right.
Like 10 tiny things I might consider I'm willing to do just to explore this, to allow myself, and then to be really kind and gentle with yourself because this is really hard. And it's also, it's just a scary process. I remember when I was feeling really stuck at work, first of all, I was miserable, so it was not very fun to be around, which was hard because people were giving me that feedback. It wasn't very fun to be around. Like my best friend, I remember just her just like at one point just shaking her hand like, oh man, you are just like, you're pushing it here. And
what a good friend.
I know. Totally. Like to be honest. Yeah, just to be really gentle with yourself. And at that time, I remember it was really scary because I just had no idea what the eventual outcome was going to be. I mean, you just don't know. And kind of going through a career transition like that can be a little like writing a novel. There's a great, I think it was E.L. Doctorow said, when you're writing a novel, it's like driving down a country road at night and you're all you can see is like the 20 feet of dirt road in front of you, but no further. You don't know, like, does the road end? Like, is it going to be a big mountain in front of you? You have no idea. So it's just kind of all you need to know, though, is that they're 20 feet in front of you and step forward like that. And it can be really helpful to get a health coach or a life coach or somebody to walk on that path with you and help navigate that. I know that helped me tremendously. Or to have just a friend that, or somebody who's also maybe going through it where you support each other. Mm. You get together weekly for coffee or something to talk about. This is what I'm, the scary thing I'm going to do this week. I decided I'm going to go to this writer's retreat or I'm going to this essential oils class and Yeah, like I'm scared because whatever the fear is, you know, and talking about that.
And some of those things feel, like you say, they're small, but when you have a bigger investment in them, it makes it even harder, even though somebody else will go, whatever, it's an essential oils class, whatever. But you've like got this big idea around it and what it could mean to you. And it probably even means it probably does mean something to you and you should go.
Right. Oh my gosh. So true. It's like, it almost just becomes this big thing, which brings me to another thing, that failure is kind of part of the road too. So maybe you go to this, maybe there's this class, you're like, this essential oils teacher, she's the one, like if I could be like her, or this yoga teacher, let's say, then I know I can make it. And then maybe you take their class and something goes sideways or goes wrong and you feel like it's, you know, you experience some sort of failure or what you perceive to be a failure. And that, I always just say, like, again, be really gentle with yourself, because failure is kind of part of the process. Maybe you discover, wow, this isn't what I thought it was. Like, I don't want to be a yoga teacher, but I really loved it when they were talking about the meditation. Like, that really rang a bell. And so every, quote, failure is really just embedded within that is just another clue to how you do want to step forward. Like, it's showing you, nope, not there, but yes, over here, and helping you refine and get clear on where you want to go.
Well, and I think that speaks right from your process. Like, it's you had to go through all the schooling, become a, you know, scientifically minded doctor successfully to be able to hear those conversations consistently with the, from the nurses, and the depth of that, and to be able to go, ah, that yeah. right there. Those stepping stones are yeah. really important.
And even once I left medicine and went on my sabbatical, there were many paths I went down that just kind of were, they weren't necessarily dead ends, but they just helped me to get clear. Oh yeah, I don't really want to do that. I thought I did, but I don't. And so sometimes you have to explore many different things and you may not know exactly what it is for a while. So,
but what can you learn from that?
Yeah, right. And take notes along the way. Wow, I love this. Ooh, I didn't like that.
Right. Yeah, being very mindful about what the good and the not so good, or the, like you said, the pieces that call you, even though they might not make sense at the time, but something is calling you. Pay attention to the something that's calling you and figure out, wow, that fits into whatever big picture you don't even see yet, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What else am I forgetting to ask you? What else do you want to share?
One thing people should know about is that I have this book called yes. Swimming with Elephants. So I'll share about that.
Please
and
do.
You can find that at followyourfeelgood.com. And the book really talks you through this crazy transition with my four kids and and my husband, and just all the wacky ways it goes. And most everybody's reading it has been saying, you know, I feel, after reading the book, I'm feeling really inspired about my own dream and inspired to really like step out further. So I think, you know, which is exciting. So I think if you're looking for more inspiration, sometimes through story, you may see yourself in my book too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you're curious about animal spirits and you want to, like, check out more animal messages, there's an app at the website, followyourfeelgood.com, that has lots of messages from lots of different animals, and it's an app for iPhone or iPad. So check that out, too, because people sort of find some inspiration there as well.
When you were talking about take the little step, I was thinking swimming with elephants could be that little step, because it does. It just starts to get your brain thinking and working, and seeing you take such a big step is in a very different step. It's like, okay, maybe this step that I want to take isn't so, they're not so disparate after all.
Right. And if some person did it and made it through the other side, maybe
I can too.
That's
yeah.
right. For sure you can.
So share your other books too.
Oh yes. I have another book called Born to Freak, A Salty Primer for Irrepressible Humans. And that's kind of my love letter to people who are, I was diagnosed with ADHD as an adult. And it's sort of a love letter to people who've been received a diagnosis from a mental health professional, like ADHD, anxiety, depression, bipolar, Asperger's, one of those things. You know, many of us feel really like something's terribly wrong with us. And through a lot of different processes, I realized what I thought was wrong with me was what was absolutely right with me. And so I tell a lot of personal stories and anecdotes about how to sort of embrace yourself. So whether you're in that, you know, in that diagnosis, you've, you know, kind of gotten one of those diagnoses, or you really love somebody who has gotten one of those diagnoses, you may find the book inspiring. And then I have a new book coming out in summer called The Book of Beasties, and that's going to be all about spirit animals, coming from Sounds True, July 1st.
Awesome.
So yeah, you can pre-order that book on my website.
And Swimming with Elephants, also on audible.com.
Oh yes, it's an Audible book now, so you can, like, you know, do yoga or walk around the block while you're listening to it. Yeah.
Let it sink in.
That's right. Exactly.
Well, thank you. This is inspiring and fun, and appreciate your time and sharing. Work is a big part of our life.
It is.
And we need to, you know, yes, we need to pay the bills. We need to do all those things. But man, if we can do it being happy and excited about what we're doing, we're going to serve ourselves and everybody else so much more if we can find that space to make it all come together and work.
Amen, Judy. Amen. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you.
Hey, I hope you had as good a time listening as I did chatting with Sarah. You know, you might check Sarah out on Facebook as well. And if you do the book club kind of thing, or if that's a thing you like to do and have a group of people that would love to read her Swimming with Elephants book and have a chat about it, connect with her. She has been known to do, hope you don't mind me saying this, Sarah, she has been known to come to the book clubs, be they in person or over the web, to have a conversation with the folks who have read the book. So I don't know how all of that works, but connect with her and check with her on that if that's something you might be interested in. And it's a great way to get to know her a little bit better, but just get that kind of visceral insight to the book, which I think is so much fun. And Sarah is delightful and fantastic. She's so much fun. It's all just a good and thoughtful time. I appreciate Sarah and her time. I hope you guys did too. Thank you so much for listening. You can check out the podcast and subscribe on iTunes. You can check out the website and listen to all the podcasts at wellnessrenpodcast.com or my main website at wellnessren.com. Thanks so much. This is Judy with Wellness Renaissance. Here is to you finding the pieces that fit into your health puzzle. Have a fantastic day. See you next time.